Last week I started a series on the presence and the power, because I believe that those are two words that are key to who we are as a church, and I believe that they're meant to be part of our identity as believers, that we're ones who know what it is to carry presence. So you cannot escape from the presence of God. You can try. You can even be like Jonah. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story of Jonah, but he thought he could run from the presence of God. And he found out when he got a Mediterranean cruise and a very big fish, that even in the belly of a fish, God was there. And I know some of you have tried to run from God and found out it doesn't work. So right, you didn't need to say amen there. So we've been looking at, from last week, this call to carry the presence. And in Acts 6, it says, speaking of Stephen, that they looked at him and his face was like that of an angel. It was because of the glory of God that was on that man. Has anyone here ever had somebody say to you, there's something different about you? Or words to those effect. What is it about you? They've seen something on you. Anybody had that happen? Yes, a few of you are starting to raise your hands. I remember once I was praying for this lady in the supermarket. She was a Hindu woman. I was praying for her for healing. Prayed for her, got healed, and that. And she looked at me and she said, are you a god? I just laughed and I said, no, but I know a God who loves people. See, people are meant to look at us and know that there is something different about us. Why? Because we're carrying presence. We're carrying that glory. See, what is glory? Glory is the presence of God manifested. That's what the glory is. And when it says in Isaiah 60, arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. That's a reality that we're called to walk in. And last week we looked also at Peter, where he not only carried the presence, but he released that presence. And I believe as soon as we start to become aware of what we carry, then we know what we can release. And in Acts 5, they lined the streets with people. And Peter, simply walking down that street, he released the glory that was on him. And it said that they were all healed. All. Not sure that you caught that. They were all healed. That's what God is calling the church to walk in. Well, we know what it is to carry presence and to release presence. So we also looked at this verse in Acts last week. Come on. Acts 13, verse 22. He raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Last week we spoke on two aspects, and that is having a heart after God, going after God, and doing his will. Obedience does come into it. Now, that was last week. I want to carry on from that this week. And I want to talk more about this man, David. David is a fascinating character in the Old Testament. He was like a man born out of time. In fact, he is a prototype for New Testament believers. David was born under the law. Yet David did things that was reserved for born-again believers. So we're going to start and we're going to have a look at this man's life, and we're going to look at what it was that he carried, how he lived. See, he had such a deep relationship with the Lord that Jesus is called the Son of David. That's huge. The Son of God is called the Son of David. And when you look through the Old Testament, you see that every king that came along was compared with David. David set such a high watermark that every king that came after him was either called according to being like David or not like David. It was like, he's the standard. So what is it about this guy, David? I want us to have a look at some things from his life and see what it is that he carries. And I believe that there's three aspects to his life. I believe he was a worshipper, a warrior, and a king. And I want to look at those three aspects. And for us to look at walking in those three aspects, because I believe that we need all three. See, when we look in Revelation 5:10, it says, "And he has made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth." We are called to be kings, not paupers, kings. And priests. A priest is one who ministers to God. And a huge aspect of that is worship. See, the word worship comes from the word worth-ship. That was the original word, because to worship is to ascribe worth to somebody or something. And every time we give something value, we give something honor, we give something a high place in our life, we are worshiping that thing. We are by nature worshippers. And I believe that this part of our life is something that needs to be strong. And when we look at the life of David, we see a huge aspect of worship. Now, Revelation also talks about us in other terms. It says repeatedly when the letters are written to the churches, to him who overcomes. It just went away. To him who overcomes. That's found in Revelation. If we're going to overcome, I suggest that there's probably a battle for us to fight. Thanks, Smitter. I think we're meant to be a worshipper, a warrior, and a king. And I believe if we try to skip one of those parts out, we will have problems. We're primarily going to look at David, but we're also going to look at a few others who decided that they would leave out one of those aspects. And we will look at their life as well. So I hope you'll enjoy it. It's going to be a fun study. And to look at some of the situations in the Old Testament, But as I said, we're going to start with this guy, David. Now, David was the youngest son of a guy called Jesse. We know that there was 8 boys. Don't know how many girls there was. They only wrote down the boys. They wrote down the girls, the Bible would be much bigger. So we know that he was the youngest boy. Now, who's heard of Samuel? Okay, who can tell me where Samuel was raised? In the temple. Samuel was raised in the presence of God. He served Eli the priest. He was taken there as a little boy. And he lived there. It was actually in Shiloh where the Ark of the Covenant was. And that's where he lived as a boy. Now, where did David live? In the fields. David was not raised in the traditional understanding of the presence of God. David was raised as a boy to look after the sheep. In those days, what they did, they didn't have fences like we do nowadays. What they did was they had a pen that the sheep stayed in overnight. And in the morning, one of the young ones, a boy or a girl, would go out with the sheep and would go ahead of the sheep, and their job was to look after the sheep, stay with them all day, while the sheep ate the green grass out on the hillsides. So you had shepherdesses and shepherds sitting out on the hillside watching sheep. That was how they did it in that day. That is a context of where David grew up. Now, we don't know much about David's early life. It comes within the category of the silent years. And all of us have silent years. If you look at any person that you want to look at in history that God has used to make a significant effect upon society, or live powerfully for God in some way, you will find that there are silent years. Years that you hear very little about. But the fruit of those years impacts that person's life, the rest of their life. See, I think many of us are in silent years. And we can easily think that it doesn't really matter what we do or how we live. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to see. We're just free to live life the way that we want to. And yes, you are. But you will carry the fruit of that into the next season. See, I believe that David learnt some incredible things when he was out on those hillsides. One of the things that he learnt, he wrote in Psalm 22, that God is enthroned on the praises of Israel. I'm going to bring up for you some other psalms. Now, these are all psalms of David. And I want you to listen. We're just going to read through them. I want you to listen to what David started to declare. Because in those days, I've already said that the Ark of God was at Shiloh. When people wanted to worship God, they did one of two things. They either went to where the ark was and they worshipped there and they brought with them a sacrifice, or they built an altar or went up to a high place. And again, what did they bring? They brought an offering, a sacrifice, a bull, a goat, a sheep, a turtle dove, a grain offering. When you read through the Old Testament, you see through Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, you see again and again the mention of the sacrifices that they made, right? Anybody read through that and go, dear Lord, I'm so pleased I don't live there. They offered so many rams and so many bulls, and it's like, goodness me, what a mess. Imagine if we all had to come to church and bring a sheep with us. That is how they worshipped God. Because it was pre-cross, and their worship was focused on the sacrifice that Jesus would make at the cross. Psalm 51, 16 and 17. You do not desire sacrifice, or else I would give it. You do not delight in burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. Psalm 107, 22. Let them sacrifices, the sacrifices of thanksgiving, and declare his works with rejoicing. Psalm 141, 1 and 2. Psalm of David. Lord, I cry out to you. Make haste to me. Give ear to my voice when I cry out to you. Let my prayer be set before you as incense. The lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. See, I don't know if you are aware of it, but David totally changed how people worshipped God. Let's look at this, Leviticus 16:2. The Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron, your brother, do not come at just any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, lest he die. For I will appear in the cloud above the mercy seat. How many times did Aaron, or the high priest, go in before the mercy seat, before the Ark of the Covenant? Can anyone tell me? Once a year. And then not without blood. Tells us that even in Hebrews. Once a year and not without blood. In fact, they put round the leg of the high priest a rope. Because if he dropped dead in there, nobody was going in to get him. Now, who said this? Who said, you don't come in here lightly, because if you do, you will die? Who said that? God. Okay, we look at the story of David. 2 Samuel 5, he is made king. Very next chapter, chapter 6, he plans to bring the Ark of the Covenant, which is at Shiloh. He says, I want God's presence in Jerusalem. And he plans to bring the presence. Why? Because he just loved the presence of God. When they finally bring the presence of God into Jerusalem, there is so much rejoicing. David took off his kingly robes and he put the robes of a priest on. Says that he danced before the Lord in a linen ephod. Why? Because he was first and foremost a worshipper. Now let's have a look at a couple of verses of what David did. 1 Chronicles 16 verse 4, and he, that's David, appointed some of the Levites to minister before the ark of the Lord, to commemorate, to thank, and to praise the Lord God of Israel. Verse 37, so he left Asaph and his brothers there before the ark of the covenant of the Lord to minister before the ark regularly as every day's work required. God said, you don't come in here. And David said, guess what? We're going to be in the presence of God every day. And we're not coming in with blood. We're coming in with thanksgiving and praise and worship. And every day, they had around-the-clock worship before the ark. This place that was so holy that the high priest only dared to go there once a year. David, because of his love for the presence, brought a whole company of people into that presence. And they worshipped. Pretty amazing to change what God had set up. I don't know about you, but I think that's some amazing God. Guy, I mean. Now let's jump forward many years to the New Testament. Acts 15, verse 16 and 17. This is a prophetic promise. After this, I will return and will rebuild the tabernacle of David, which has fallen down. I will rebuild its ruins and I will set it up so that the rest of mankind may seek the Lord. Even all the Gentiles who are called by my name, says the Lord, who does all these things. Throughout Israel's history, you have the tabernacle. You have where they traveled, the Israelites traveled through the wilderness, and they had the tabernacle, which was in the midst of the camp. And if you read through the book of Exodus, you will see specific instructions of how big, all the dimensions of everything that was built, right down to how many knobs were on the candlestick. God was specific. Then, as I said, you had the ark that was at Shiloh. That's where it was until David brought it to Jerusalem. You later had Solomon, who built this elaborate, amazing temple. Gold inside and out. It was absolutely beautiful. That was destroyed. You had what was called Herod's temple. That's where Jesus went. He walked in that temple. David's tent or tabernacle, we don't even have any dimensions for it. We don't know what it looked like. We only know one thing. The ark of God's presence was there. That's all that we know. And the ark was surrounded by worshippers 24/7. That's all we know. Now, if you were God and you said, okay, I want to rebuild upon earth a place that represents my dwelling with people, which one would you rebuild? The one that you gave all the instructions over? That you said, hey, this is a copy of what's in the heavenlies. How about the elaborate one? The one filled with all the gold and the glory? No, God says, David's one. I really like David's one. What was it about David's tabernacle that God loved and said, I'm going to raise up that tabernacle? I believe it's because it was a place of worship. It was a place of the heart. And I believe it's a picture of you and I. See, God ripped the veil in the temple when Jesus died, because his plan all along had been to dwell with man. The only reason he had to have a veil, and a huge thick veil, between himself and the people was because Jesus had not yet died. But this man called David, with a heart for worship, looked ahead into time and saw God's heart. And he replaced the sacrifices of blood with the sacrifices of praise. And you and I are called to live as that tabernacle. Temple, tabernacle, same word. You are the temple of God. You are that David tabernacle. You are the key to the rest of mankind seeking the Lord. Because you are God's tabernacle. You are God's dwelling place on earth. In fact, in John, where it says, and Jesus became flesh and dwelt among us. That word dwelt is the word tabernacled. Now we tabernacle on earth, people filled with presence, who know what it is to worship an amazing God, and open realms for people that they did not even think they could have access to. And in fact, they don't have access to, because only the blood makes a way into the presence. But when you carry presence, you make a way for the rest of mankind. Don't let the devil dumb down your seeking of the presence of God. Now I want to finish with 2 Samuel 7. In 2 Samuel 7, I told you about 2 Samuel 5, is where David becomes king. 2 Samuel 6, he plans to bring the presence of God to Jerusalem. It's like, I don't want to be a king without presence. 2 Samuel 7 is where David wants to build a house for God. And he's like, I want to build this glorious place for God's presence. And God wakes up Nathan in the middle of the night, gives him a prophetic word and sends him off to David. So we're not going to look at the prophetic word. I encourage you to have a look at it when you go home. It's amazing what God says to David. And he says basically, listen, you wanted to build me a house, but I'm going to build your house. And your lineage won't stop, and your seed will reign forever. There's this incredible promise that comes out where God speaks to David and he says, I promise you a son, the son of David. Why? Because he was a man after God's presence. And I want us to look at David's response. I want you to imagine for a moment that a prophet has come through, one of the most well-known prophets that we can think of. He has declared this amazing prophecy over you of what God has called you to. And he finishes. What would you then do? Would you think, man, look what God said. Wow, that's awesome. Tuck it in your pocket and go home. Verse 18, then King David went in and sat before the Lord. I want you to hear the heart of this man and recognize the time that he lived in. A man born under the law, but with such a heart for the presence of God that he goes in and he sits before the Lord. David knew how to find the presence of God. We will look later at the fact that the greatest battle against David's life, he strengthened himself in God. We need to know how to do that. David knew how to find God's presence, whether it was in those silent years, sitting out on the hill, watching a bunch of sheep, wondering what life was all about, whether it was a warrior in the heat of battle, or whether it was a king. What an amazing promise. He knew how to find the presence of God. And my challenge to you today is, do you know how to find his presence? Do you live from that presence? Do you take the time to simply sit before the Lord? And we're going to finish by doing that this morning. We're going to just take a few minutes. You may want to get pad, pen. You may want to draw. You may want to write. Our time has basically gone, but I want to spend just a few minutes sitting before the Lord, because I think this is a place we need to be familiar with. We need to get comfortable with. And a lot of people find sitting before the Lord not an easy thing to do.